Batter Up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 175 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
The tank mode continues to be on, fast and furious, as the Mets took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs last week, but then had their asses absolutely handed to them by the Atlanta Braves over the weekend. No surprise there.
Lordy.
I was like, possibly the biggest stink burger series of the year. And they didn't even get swept. Like, they won they salvaged the final game of the 4-game series by
salvaged in every sense of the word.
By a skinny 7-6 lead. They almost blew that game and they didn't quite manage to do it. And that
hero Rafael Ortega.
Rafael Ortega, big hero in that one. on national TV, no less. But yeah, with Starling Marte still on the injured list, and Brandon Nimmo and Francisco Lindor each having like tiny issues that caused them to miss a game, there have been some truly heinous, like unprecedentedly heinous Mets lineups that have happened.
I still don't know all of them. I do not know all of those people. I'm sorry. It's my job. I realize, like, to some minor extent, we get paid to know this stuff, and I don't know it.
I don't either.
Sorry.
In that vein, when
was he on the team?
In that vein, breaking news, Jonathan Arrows just hit a 2-run home.
Oh, is he one of ours?
Yeah. That guy's on the Mets and has been. He was briefly not on the Mets. So he was on the Mets and then was briefly not on the Mets and then immediately was on the Mets again.
All right.
Yeah.
Way to go.
That happened.
Have a good split squad.
Yeah. No, this is some of the, especially the lineup they trotted out in game one of that doubleheader on Saturday was a spring training ass lineup. Like, it was, I think the only regulars in there were Pete Alonso. I think that was it. Because, and I guess if you count Omar Narvaez as a regular, because I think he caught game one. Yes, because we saw Francisco Alvarez in game 2. That's right. I was there at that game. More on that later. but yeah, it was like, there were basically like no major league caliber players in that.
And how did that work out for them, Allison?
Yeah,
they lost 21-3.
That's bad.
8 of those runs were surrendered by position player Danny Mendick.
Who started, Linda?
Denny Reyes did. Denny Reyes.
The Denny Reyes.
So that's about all you need to know about the Mets right now. That's like, that game encapsulates everything you need to know about them.
I will associate forever with that game was seeing an alert come up on my phone and picking it up to see that it was the Braves having scored a run. And then immediately, as I'm still looking at it, another score alert comes up. That happened 3 times.
Yes. Yep, yep.
3 times.
Yep.
It was extremely rude.
And it was literally like every pitch. It was like home run, double, yep. Home run, double, double, home run, single, home run. Like, that's like literally what it was. Oh, man. No, anyway.
And when, because Baz was tweeted, our friend Baz, he tweeted that this was like the worst lineup he's ever seen in his 30 years as a fan. But I still think that game in 2015 where John Mayberry was the cleanup hitter.
I actually mentioned that game to Michael while we were listening. So we did not watch any of that.
That's what I countered with, was that game.
We did not watch any of the 21-3 game, thankfully, because we were driving up literally to Citi Field to watch the nightcap. So we didn't watch. I guess we saw the very beginning of the day game, but before things got really, really bad. But I was commenting, is this a worse lineup than that 2015 game? I came down on the side of yes, it is worse. I thought it was worse. That's my opinion, but it's close.
But Pete is least capable. You cannot have John Mayberry Jr. as a cleanup hitter and be serious.
I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, it was bad. Like it was definitely a top three worst Mets lineup I have ever seen. And I was like, this team right now is pretty much as bad a Mets team since the Art Hal Mets, basically. You have to go back that far to find a Mets team that's as bad as the team is right now. Obviously pre-trade deadline, different story, but as bad as this team is right now.
We do have the lineup from that game, because I have the lineup from the John Mayberry game, so maybe we can compare.
Oh, let's compare. I'll bring up the box score from the day game.
Because everybody was assuming the Kershaw no-hitter before it even happened, and he threw a one-hitter because of Curtis Granderson.
See, but there you go. Curtis Granderson, that's one major leaguer that was in that lineup.
Yes.
All right, so let's... Who pitched for 2015? I feel like Cologne. That also...
It was Bartolo.
So that's
person. I feel like what was so brutal about this lineup was like looking down the list of batters and being like, oh my God, that is... Wow. I don't know these names or that name. And then you get to the pitcher and it doesn't help. Like, it doesn't help at all.
So, no.
So let's go like spot by spot in the lineup. Okay.
Okay.
So leading off in the 2023 Mets, we have Rafael Ortega. Grandy. There you go. So point for 2015. Point Grandy. Yeah. Batting second, we have Mark Vientos.
I might do you one better. Ruben Tejada.
Ooh, that's close, but for different reasons.
Short that day.
Should we call it a wash on those two?
Let's call that a wash.
Vientos at least has power.
Yeah, but Ruben Tejada had been like an established, like, I don't want to say established major leaguer. That's stretching the definition of major leaguer a little far. But like a guy who's played in the major leagues for some time.
Yeah, so I knew what you were going to get from him, which was typically going to be better than what Mark Vientos has done so far.
And I will point out that Mark Vientos did go 0-for-5 with three strikeouts. All credit to Mark Vientos, who has been playing better lately, but not in this particular game.
That was not his day.
Wait, he'll pitch for the Braves that day.
During
this lineup.
Well, that's the other thing that's particularly cruel. It's that guy who used to be in the Mets system.
Oh,
Winans? What's his name? Winans? Yeah, who pitched 7 scoreless innings.
Oh, good God.
Of course. All right, but hold on. Who was batting third?
Batting third for the 2023 Mets, Jeff McNeil.
Okay, we have Wilmer.
But the...
That's close to a wash, I would say, also, because 2020... normally, I would be just, like, on the surface, I would call that advantage McNeil, but not 2023 Jeff McNeil, who hasn't been very good.
Yeah.
But this was also 2015 Wilmer Flores.
Who was good.
Yeah.
Was he good at that point in the season, though? I kind of felt like he was bad.
Yeah.
I feel like I will. If someone was like, do you want May 2015 Wilmer Flores or 2023 Jeff McNeil? I'd probably choose 2023 Jeff McNeil.
Okay, we'll go point McNeil. So now we're even.
Okay,
we got 1 point Grandy, 1 point McNeil. Okay. Now, next, it batting cleanup for the 2023 New York Mets, Pete Alonso. There we go, the one real player.
Okay, my slugger is John Mayberry Jr.
Point Alonso. So that's,
Are you sure? Do we want to compare numbers?
do we want to bring up the advanced metrics? I'm not sure. All right, so that's the only, like, very
I'll
clear.
I'll take this one as a given.
That's as clear as Grandy over Ortega, if not more so. So we will go Point Alonso. So it's 2-1 2023 Mets. Okay. Batting fifth, we have Vogey.
You're not ready for this one. It's Soup.
Soup? Okay, I guess that's Point Vogey. I suppose that's Point Vogey.
He was playing third.
Okay, so it's 3-1, 2023 Mets. Right. But I think 2015 might win the rest of these spots. No,
yeah,
maybe.
So let's see.
Maybe.
All right. And now I also get to tell you who what names I don't recognize.
Batting six, a guy who has since been DFA'd.
Oh no.
Abraham Almonte.
That's one of them.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna win this one. It's Duda.
Yeah, Duda beats Abraham Almonte. Yeah. There you go. All right, so it's 3-2.
Nobody wins in any of these matchups. I would just like to say
we are all losers
except
here.
For Pete and Curtis Granderson.
All right, batting seventh. I'm interested to see who's gonna win this matchup. Batting seventh is Omar Narvaez.
Juan Lagares.
Ooh, that's interesting. Both
I would probably.
Established major leaguers, but obviously very different skill sets, and both not very good with the bat in that particular year they were playing.
No,
yeah,
but also both good.
Lagares's floor wasn't that low, though. Like, I mean, it was low, but it wasn't like, I don't know.
And Lagares was like, and Lagares was like a starting player at that point.
Yeah, I feel
right?
like
he
had like
a starting
675. OPS kind of guy. Like
Narvaez is the backup catcher right now. I mean, I know he was signed to be the starting catcher, but he is not the starting catcher. This is the backup catcher, basically. Yeah. I think we're gonna have to go point Lagares.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think I would give it to Lagares.
So now we're tied again. All right. Batting eighth, DJ Stewart.
Okay. I could do you one better. Anthony Recker.
Oh, okay. Oh. Okay. Okay. I might call that a wash.
But Recker, I mean, had some assets.
Recker had some assets. DJ Stewart.
But none of those assets were hits.
Baseball related.
DJ Stewart that's the backup catcher. And then DJ Stewart is like not a major leaguer right now. He was once, not now. And even when he was like a fourth outfielder pinch hitter type.
Yeah, that's not great.
I'll call that a wash. All right. Batting ninth. I mean, I guess it's unfair to 2015 because pitchers still hit.
Hey, Bartolo was a slugger, excuse you.
And we've got Jonathan Arruz, who did just hit a home run, to be fair.
Did he hit a home run in that game?
I was going to say, Jonathan Arruz and Bartolo Colon, handshake emoji, one career homer. So, maybe that's
but you know what? Honestly, I think what ultimately makes the 2015 team a little bit better is the fact that they had a real pitcher.
Yeah,
it's like, true. The pitcher might push.
That's
well. Are you ready for who the relievers were in that game?
Oh yeah,
sure am.
Okay, it's Sean Gilmartin.
Great,
he was good that year.
And Carlos Torres.
Wow,
was he good that year? He was good all year.
Here, I mean, I'm obviously going to do you one better there because I've got Reed Garrett, Josh Walker, and drumroll please, Danny Mendick pitching as a position player.
Well, Murphy did pinch hit.
Nobody pinch hit.
So we didn't have a Murph pinch hitting appearance.
We
here.
Did not have a single pinch hitting appearance because they were behind by so much so early that they just gave up.
And the backups were already in. Who do you pinch hit with?
Right. There's nobody left because Lindor and Nimmo were both unavailable but not on the injured list. This is really close. This is
this one's tough.
I still think I think this 2023 lineup was worse, but only by a little bit.
I'm with you on it's closer than I had thought.
It is closer than I thought.
But I feel like the pitching seals it, even if there were still remaining questions.
Thank you.
That was a fun game. The Mets are now a half a
let's
game.
Let's never play it again.
Let us never play this game again. Except we'll be playing this game again with every Mets lineup subsequent. Although in theory, maybe not, because I do think like that lineup, because it didn't have Lindor and Nimmo in it, was like kind of the peak.
And because it was a doubleheader.
Because it was a doubleheader. So yeah, it was real bad. But anyway, the Mets are now only a half a game ahead of the Nationals for last place in the American League East as we play currently on Monday night. Although the Mets are currently winning. I don't know what the Nationals are currently doing. The Mets are currently maybe not. I don't know. Mets are currently winning against a Pirates team that is kind of in a similar situation to them where they're real bad.
Now, this was a Facebook post, so take it with a grain of salt. I don't know if it's accurate. It's a Facebook post. But it says, for the first time ever, the Mets and Yankees were both in last place this late into the season.
I mean, hard to independently fact check that on the fly, but I could buy that that's true.
I could buy
it. Yeah, I mean, I saw somewhere that the Yankees finished in last place like twice since the Mets began.
So, yeah, like,
yeah, Yankees, so the numbers are like.
The Yankees haven't had a losing season since like 1992 or something. And so it would be, I mean, obviously part of the reason that like is because the AL East is so good and they're in last place despite their record not being that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, yeah. But it's not that bad. But like, so they can conceivably end up with a winning season, even if it's just like one game over 500 and come in last place. That's a thing that could happen to them. But I don't remember a time during my fandom where both the Mets and the Yankees were this bad at the same time.
No, I don't either.
It's pretty dire straits in New York right now.
Catch the fever. New York sports, catch the fever.
Catch the fever. No, wait, that's COVID.
Yeah, please don't catch anything.
No.
We're asking you not to. The Nationals are currently not playing, so as near as I can tell. So if the Mets win, they will be one game ahead of the Nationals. If they lose, they will have the same record as the Washington Nationals as we record this. So that's fun. But like sure. We said, they're
why
like,
not?
Tank is on. And the Nationals, what's interesting is the Nationals, and this sort of stretches my limits of understanding. And even though Michael is not present here with me, I can hear him yelling at me from across state lines for not understanding the technicalities of this, because he's like much better at this stuff than I am. But like the Nationals like can't pick in the top six because of they can't get the top pick again because they've gotten the top pick two times in a row or something.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, because it's like an anti-tanking measure that's in the new CBA and the new like draft lottery system, which is good. It's like you can't like yeah. You get you still the part of the lottery is that it you just have odds of getting a better pick if you're worse. And it's not a guarantee. And you can't get the top pick too many times in a row. So the Nationals like are guaranteed to not, it doesn't really matter to the Mets what the Nationals do, I don't think. Like the Nationals don't factor into the Mets needing to have one of the six worst records or whatever. Like it doesn't
matter. Do they play each other again anymore this year? Because that series might mean something.
Oh yes, they do. They're playing in DC. Guess who has tickets to both those games? Yours truly. Like
maybe it'll be a beautiful day.
Maybe. Yeah.
It'll be a lovely, lovely day.
One of the games is Barkus Park, so at least Blue will get to enjoy herself because she won't know that the Mets are bad. She doesn't understand that. She's a dog.
Maybe she'll pitch a baseball.
We'll pitch one of them.
Maybe. That'd be cool. I haven't seen Senga yet. So.
I haven't either.
That'd be nice. I did get to see Jose Quintana, even though the Mets lost that game, but that was cool because he's actually been pretty good.
And he's actually one of the, like, three Mets on the planet that is signed through next year. Yeah, so.
Yes, it's true. I don't mind factoring him. Like, I have no problem with penciling him into the rotation next year. That's fine.
I mean, he's not just been serviceable. He's been good.
He's been good. He's been good. He's been very solid. Like, solid number three in the rotation type numbers. Very solid. I'm fine with him occupying a spot in next year's rotation. I feel fine about that. So speaking of next year, if we want to have some hope regarding 2024, we talked after the trade deadline about the implications for the trades that they made for whether they will be competitive in 2024. And obviously Max Scherzer talked about his conversations he had with Billy Epler, where he claims Billy Epler basically told him that they're not going to try to compete in 2024 and they're kind of retooling for 2025. But Ken Rosenthal did write an encouraging piece in The Athletic recently, which indicated that the Mets do indeed plan to spend in free agency. And Rosenthal, there are a few interesting nuggets contained within that article. The first is regarding Shohei Ohtani, about which Rosenthal wrote, if anyone thinks Cohen is going to pass on an opportunity to pursue the greatest player of our generation and maybe greatest of all time, they haven't been paying attention. So
yeah, I will say, I kind of find this idea that, like, I mean, even if the Mets intend at this point in time to not be big players in the offseason, who on the planet thinks Steve Cohen would keep his wallet closed for 20 minutes? Like, that, there is nothing in history to suggest that that would happen. He is a one-track mind kind of guy, and it is money.
Yeah. And I think they will at least do a genuine we tried on Ohtani. Like, they may not end up with him, but it's going to be a sincere we tried and not a we tried so we look good. We tried.
I never doubted that Cohen would go after Ohtani. It's just, does Ohtani want to be here? That's what it's going to come down to.
Yep, that's the question. And we do not know the answer to that because Shohei Ohtani is purposefully very not forthcoming about what he's thinking, and which he has every right to do that.
Although, did you see that one time he was going to cry because the Angels blew it late? I was he shouldn't come here.
I think he hasn't said anything, obviously, because again, it's just not his personality. Like, he's just not going to talk about what his intentions are. But I think if one thing is clear, it's that he is gone from Anaheim.
Yeah, I think so too. But for his mental health, I don't know if he should be here either.
Yeah.
I don't care about his mental health that much.
I care about it a lot.
I care about it a lot. But I'm going to go ahead and say that he can have the same problem here that he would have anywhere else.
But I bet he can also have a lot of money here.
What certainly seems like a more sure thing than Shohei Ohtani is that Ken Rosenthal also wrote in the piece that Yamamoto makes the most sense for the Mets in free agency when it comes to pitching, which is not really a surprise because the Mets have already been linked to him in several ways, including obviously Billy Epler being very active in the Japanese sphere, bringing in Senga. And I think that the Mets are similarly interested in Yamamoto, the advantage being that, unlike a lot of the other major pitching free agents, Yamamoto is 25 years old and very good. People who have watched him pitch in Japan say that he's, and you know, we saw him in the World Baseball Classic, say he's better than even Senga was at the time. So that's exciting. Obviously it's not any breaking news or anything what Rosenthal wrote, but Rosenthal is. He's a major reporter and pretty well connected. So if he's writing that Yamamoto makes sense for the Mets, again, you can read between the lines about that.
Cool would it be to have Senga, Ohtani, and Yamamoto?
That'd be pretty freaking cool.
It would be pretty freaking cool.
And I think it would be I'm searching for a better term, but it would be a spectacle. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a positive way. It would be a big show.
Yeah. It would be a thing.
That would be also major star power.
Some of the isolation that these guys talk about feeling, which, you would have to if you're the only one in a clubhouse that speaks the language, it can be a really isolating experience. I would think that the possibility of having kind of a network there would really be appealing to everyone involved.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if they play together in the World Baseball Classic, too.
All I know is that that hero, the lovely Japanese translator for the Mets, who we featured on a recent Mensch of the Week, would have his work cut out for him. They brought
hero
on.
Might have to get a second.
An assistant.
Yes. After one of his games, Senga was his kids. Finally got to see him pitch because he said they don't really cover him back in Japan because they're all covering Ohtani. So he said, my kids don't really get to see me pitch back home. So imagine, if all of the press now descended because you had the three best Japanese players all playing in the same team, that would be insane.
It would be pretty freaking cool.
That would be very exciting.
Although,
remember when Hideki Matsui came
over? Yes.
And all the press that followed him everywhere.
Yeah, I remember that too. it was cool.
And it was cool.
It would be really cool, although it doesn't seem like that would be a drawing factor for Shohei Ohtani. In fact, it might be the opposite of that. The New York press factor. It doesn't seem that he is one that actually seeks out the spotlight. I don't think that he's scared of it necessarily. I just think that he's a guy that likes to keep to himself a lot and doesn't necessarily, you know, want to be swarmed by media after every game, which he doesn't have to deal with as an Angel all that much.
Yeah.
despite his like nationwide celebrity. But yeah, then that would get ratcheted up to like level 11 if he was playing in New York.
But I feel like his endorsement chances are would be a lot more
very lucrative
too.
And I mean, I think that going back to the point about Steve Cohen not passing up the opportunity, I think we can feel pretty confident that if the Mets are interested in pursuing Ohtani, which it seems like they are, they will have the best offer monetarily on the table.
I'm fairly confident that like they're not going to get him, but when it leaks how much they offered him, we might even be a tiny bit relieved, because I feel like the number is going to be very stupid.
Yes. Yeah. And like if money is what Shohei Ohtani is after and he is just going to take the best offer, then my confidence that he becomes a Met goes up a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we don't know that. We don't know if he's motivated by having the best contract or not.
Although, can I also just say how disconcerting it is? Like, I'm sitting there, you know, going to see Barbie movie, and then in the previews, the GameStop trailer comes on. I'm like, oh my god, there's Vincent
Jaffe. Oh my god, yes, I saw that too. And like, my daughter kept asking me questions about it. I was just like, no, hold on, I just want to watch this.
Like, does he really have the pig? I want to know, does he have the pig?
We need to do a whole like unpacking of this preview.
We
at
do.
Some point. This needs to be like an episode.
Investigative reporting.
What we've been able to figure out.
Yeah.
I feel like we should all go see it and then do like a pod on it.
Or we can just go to Barbie movie again.
Yeah, that too. We can do that. But I am a big Sebastian Stan fan. I won't turn down anything that has Sebastian Stan in it. Just putting that out there.
the third interesting nugget contained within that Ken Rosenthal piece is he gave he conveniently gave the framework of what a Pete Alonso extension might look like, wink wink wink, which turns out to be 5 to 6 years, $30 million ish average annual value, which is suspiciously similar to the number that Laura Albanese recently put out there this week. So make of that what you will. Again, we can, if you've been listening to this podcast and follow the Mets closely and follow baseball media closely and have been for a long time, you know what multiple connected reporters reporting the same sort of number of what an extension might look like sort of means. So I think that that's encouraging, just to see Ken Rosenthal be like, and by the way, if the Mets were to extend Alonso, here's what I think it might look like theoretically, in theory, if it were to happen, maybe. Like, yeah, okay, we all know what that means.
And that's pretty reasonable, too. That's what you would expect Pete to get.
Yeah, it's
yeah, my suspicion is that this is like straight from the front office, and this is very much the amount they would like him to take.
Yeah.
I hope he gets a little hometown non-discount, like, rounding up a bit, because I do think, you know, that is important, and that's something he brings to the team that isn't really measured in stats. But yeah, I mean, I think that's where you would start from.
Yeah. And yeah. Also, I mean, he's had the most home runs since he entered the league. That's got to mean something.
And just tonight, he matched Keith Hernandez on the all-time Mets RBI list.
He's going to have all the records
already.
Yeah,
he is. All the home run records, he's going to have them.
Yeah.
If he extends, he's going to have a lot of the records, a lot of the Mets franchise records.
Oh, poor Dave.
Yeah, assuming that his career is hopefully longer than David Wright's, because David Wright's was cut off very prematurely. you know, obviously if David Wright's career lasted as long as it should have, if all was right in the world, then it would be hard to imagine that David Wright would not retain a lot of the records, not home runs. I think Pete would still take that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the others. But as it stands, Pete Alonso is going to end up with a lot of the franchise records. And Brandon Nimmo is going to end up high on a lot of these lists, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up on a lot of those, like, counting stats type lists, besides homers, when it comes to, like, total bases and hits and, you know, plate appearances and all that. I think he's going to really run up that list very fast.
So speaking of Pete Alonso, one thing I did want to address that I wasn't going to originally address because I thought it was kind of too stupid to really talk about it. But it's kind of taken on a life of its own, this story, and it's gone beyond the initial Sal Licata comments, which I was not going to acknowledge. But then
that starts with the initial Sal Licata comments. Oh, yeah. My God.
Is that something
I'm mad already.
It's not something you want to lend credence to, but it's
the most cursed expression you could say.
It's kind of gone beyond just that and turned into a whole thing. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit, which is not just about Pete Alonso, although he is one subject of this discussion. It's about this general, like, clubhouse chemistry narrative that's going around. So Sal Licata claimed on WFAN with absolutely no evidence to back it up. It's one of those, like, I love making shit up, and he just says dumb stuff just to say it because that's what sports talk radio is. That Pete Alonso's like a clubhouse cancer and the Mets shouldn't extend him. Just like, sir, I would like you to provide any shred of evidence. I am begging for any shred of evidence to support your claims. There's no evidence
to speak of.
None whatsoever. And worth noting that in addition to no one, like, coming out and backing this up in any way, David Cone basically refuted this outright on the ESPN broadcast of the Sunday night game. The Mets were regrettably on ESPN on Sunday night, although they did win. And David Cone addressed this. I don't think they mentioned Sal Licata by name, but they said that, like, you know, oh, you know, all the nonsense about Pete Alonso being, like, a negative in the clubhouse, that's absolute hogwash. It's not true. And I, like, honestly, David Cone is probably more connected to Mets people at this stage than Sal Licata.
Yeah, so, that seems like a pretty safe bet, actually.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying that, like, David Cone has, like, a million sauces or whatever, but, like,
he's a former player. He probably talks to people.
Yeah, exactly. If there's anybody who talks to the players, it's probably David Cone. And so, yeah, he was like, that's just nonsense. It's not true. So I was like, yep. Like, I can't think of one reason why it would be true.
That is just straight up imaginary.
But also, imaginary.
Like, there's one thing to, like, say, oh, I think Pete Alonso should be traded, or the Mets can, you know, maybe, like, restock the farm system if they trade Pete. I can buy those arguments. They're wrong, but I can buy them. But to, like, slander Pete and to just lie.
Completely agree. Like, you can take the stance that the Mets would be better off trading Pete Alonso. I don't agree with it, but I can respect it if that's what you feel and you think that, like, the prospect return and, you know, they're already on their way to revitalizing the farm system. If you think it's too difficult for the Mets to compete in the near future and it would be best for them to trade their most valuable asset that they have, then that's a stance that you can take and you can back up with evidence. But there's no reason to just say, oh, they shouldn't extend him because he's not a good clubhouse presence. It's just not true. And actually, there's plenty of evidence to the contrary.
That eyes jam
being a good clubhouse presence. I tweeted this. I pointed it out, like, in that very game, in the Sunday game, Mark Vientos made a couple of nice defensive plays, actually. And after one of them, like, Pete pointed at him and, like, pumped his fist Actually, no, it wasn't in that Sunday night game. I apologize. It was in one of the other games of the series that they like got their ass kicked or whatever. I think it might have been Friday.
It's hard to narrow it down, to be totally.
Yeah, like,
they all blend together.
All the Mets games blend together. I'm so sorry. But it was Mark Fientos had a good defensive game in one of the games of the Braves series, and they were losing the game. It was like 6-0 at that point. And Pete Alonso was still like pumping his fist and pointing at him and like really pumping him up and like that's a guy who needs the confidence boost because he's struggled in the big leagues this season. And I think that that's just Pete showing him, like, we see when you're making positive contributions, like, we see that. And that's what a clubhouse leader looks like. Like, we see evidence that he's a good clubhouse guy.
Didn't a story get released earlier in the year that we said he wanted to learn Spanish so he could better communicate with his teammates?
Yes.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that sounds like a big fucking problem right there.
Right. Like,
well, I think part of it is this idea that that if you're losing, you have to be miserable every minute. Like, that you owe the world your ongoing misery until you stop losing. Kind of the baseball version of the beatings will continue until morale improves. But, like,
right. Yeah.
And he doesn't do that.
Yeah,
like,
I remember
subscribe to the idea that he has to hate baseball, you know, until the Mets start winning.
And I remember last year when the Mets were playing really poorly in September and like squandering away the division, and Pete was just like, I know we're a good team, and like, I'm not, like, he basically was not being down on himself like the fans wanted, and people were furious at him for that. Like, that he's not out here every day like, oh, we suck, woe is us. Like, that's just not who Pete is.
No, we love him for that. Like, I love his positive outlook. Like, I don't want the Mets to break that spirit. Like, what's wrong? Like, baseball's really hard. If he goes into the box thinking, we're already beat, we're doing really bad, there's no chance they're ever going to succeed.
Yeah, if you've broken Pete Alonso's spirit, then something is terribly wrong.
Yeah.
Terribly, terribly wrong. Like, and also, I mean, he's really good.
Yeah.
He should, yeah. How can you get mad at him for that when he actually backs it up? Like, the only time he wasn't good this year was when he was injured and playing through the injury.
Yeah. And like,
and that's on the Mets. That's not on him.
Yeah.
Nope. They should have yelled him.
Yeah. Like, and even though, like, obviously the player is always going to try to talk himself back onto the field and say, I'm fine. It's up to the team, up to the manager, up to the staff to be the adults in the room and be like, you need 2 weeks off, which they should have ILed him. But it's, I don't know, man, like, the guy is really good at baseball. He loves being a Met. Like, this is just a no-brainer. He's homegrown. It's just a no-brainer. And I don't understand why these idiots are just like, they shouldn't extend Pete Alonso because of things I just made up now.
Well, because they're miserable human beings and Pete Alonso is not.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're just not, yeah, just not on board with, like, the whole, like, self-hatred, perpetual misery of Mets fandom. Like, you're not a true Met if you're not depressed all the time.
Yeah, miserable. Well,
give him his giant check. Steve,
yeah,
give him a big pile of money, please.
Because I don't know if I'm making this up or not, but I could have sworn I read somewhere that he also, like, calls new, like, draftees after they get drafted to, like, welcome them to the organization.
That's
like,
wholesome.
Like, that's what you want. Bad. That's what you, like, that's the face of your franchise.
That is a page out of the David Wright
book.
David Wright handbook. That really is, yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even today, like, he was talking to Ed Cranepool, and Ed Cranepool was on stay on his feet. And, like, Pete, like, quick grabbed him to make sure he didn't fall. Like, Pete's just so wholesome.
And I think if the Mets extend Pete Alonso, they should put a C on his chest.
See, that's hard. Is it him or is it Lindor?
Yeah, I think it could be justified for either.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a hard call.
It is hard.
It is.
They're both very good and both very good leaders. And so, kind of an extension of this this whole clubhouse chemistry discussion was a piece by Mike Puma, which was mostly generally about, like, the bad clubhouse vibes this year.
We're not arguing against that.
Right, sure.
We think Pete's vibes are impeccable. but the team's vibes.
Team's vibes are bad.
Bad.
Like, what a shock. Like, losing makes people unhappy. Wow. Right.
That's what film the news. That's why I didn't want to, like, really talk about this, but it's taken on, like, so much water that I felt like we had to. But that's why this whole discussion is silly, because basically what it comes down to is team good, clubhouse chemistry good, team bad, clubhouse chemistry bad. Like, that's why these discussions are always silly, whether we're talking about how good the vibes are or how bad they are, or like, or acting like that's like indicative of anything. It's like winning fixes everything. It's really true. These were mostly the same guys last year, and everyone talked about how good the clubhouse chemistry was last year.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because the team won 101 games.
Well, like we said, like after Jake left, he still called Buck to tell him thank you for changing the clubhouse vibes. So something was doing okay last year.
And like, shock of all shocks, in 2021, when things did not go as planned, like Francisco Lindor and Jeff McNeil hated each other and were fighting. And it's like, oh, the vibes are so bad. It's like, yeah, because the team was playing bad. 2021 April was awful. So like, that's ultimately really what it comes down to. But the most notable part of the Mike Puma piece was a little tidbit in which an anonymous Met called Justin Verlander a diva. And like, basically they said that he's the clubhouse cancer now. It was Verlander all along. I thought we were like over this whole like Wilponian nonsense of slandering players on their way out, like after they're gone, being like, by the way, nobody liked him. But apparently we're not over that. And Verlander issued a statement about it today. Like, that's how much gas this took on. And what I didn't realize from the Puma piece, I guess, because Puma just called it an anonymous Met. So in my mind, that's a player.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. Verlander said, oh, I regret that a Mets staff member basically felt the need to say this about me. And I was like, oh, it was a member of the staff.
Yeah, everything he said about it, he's like, oh, he knows exactly who that is.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
He very uncomfortable. Knows who it is.
And with the way that Verlander's statement, like reading Verlander's statement, it was pretty clear that Verlander said critical things about like how the Mets are like maybe like something they're doing with their analytics department. Basically, like, you know, like coaching, like philosophy and things like that. And he had criticisms of that, and clearly that was not taken well. And listen, I obviously am not privy to how that conversation went down. And I'm not going to pretend that Verlander was probably not a little bit of a dick about it, because these players are often just like, you know,
I mean, I'm sure he is kind of a diva.
Like, yeah, like
he's a major league pitcher.
Yeah.
So that is just sort of the default mode.
But so that said, on the other hand, said Mets staff member could have either thought to themselves, maybe the Hall of Fame bound pitcher knows something about pitching and analytics. Or instead, he could have whined to Mike Puma of the New York Post and had him write a hit piece about Justin Verlander, which is the latter path is what he chose. And I don't agree with that decision.
And also, like, you haven't won since 1986. Your organization is in shambles. And here's this Hall of Fame pitcher who's won two World Series telling you, oh, you might have a problem here, and you ignore it.
And he's coming from, he played a lot of years in Houston, an organization well known for its advanced analytics.
Yes.
And probably said something to the akin to like, this is how we did things in Houston, and the Mets did not take well to that. And unless that thing was him advocating for them to cheat, which did also work well for the Astros.
Very effective strategy. Very.
And it probably would have been good to just like simply take his advice under advisement, even if it may not have been delivered in the most thoughtful way.
I'm sorry. That staffer should be fired.
No, instead you should turn around and
complain.
Call the press.
Call the press and not even put your name on it because you're a coward. Like,
clearly you're bad at your job. Look at the team. And this guy's trying to help you.
Right. And Verlander was classy about like he basically was like, I regret that staff member felt the need to say that, but I have nothing but good things to say about the Mets. And I was like, good for you, Justin. You know what?
Which is like, I think it's the second opportunity he has had since the whole fire sale that he has taken the opportunity to say, like, boy, those Mets sure are great, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which I appreciate, especially since they publicly lied to Max Scherzer to get him to leave. So having one ex-pitcher who still thinks well of the Mets is nice.
You know. The Mets created their own drama. There was no need for any of this.
There wasn't. I mean,
but this one staffer had a mouth off because he thought he was embarrassed by a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Yeah. Yep. It's very Wilpon Mets shit.
It is. Get that clown out of here. I don't care who he is. He's obviously not advancing the organization if you're not taking the advice of Justin Verlander.
Yeah. I just hope it wasn't someone very high up.
Oh, it was Billy Epler.
Literally Billy Epler. So before we move on from the 2023 Mets, because Lord knows, don't want to talk about them for too long.
No.
The Mets did make a few roster moves today. Most notably to this podcast is that John Curtis was placed on the 60-day IL with a body in his right elbow. RIP to my dude. That is a depressing outcome for my dude, basically being an up and down from Syracuse guy and then having a season ending injury. Very sad.
Like, has he been hurt this whole time, maybe?
Possibly. I mean, he didn't pitch that bad. He had a couple of, like, you know, it's hard because the sample size is so small because he wasn't really up that often. And he did have a couple of outings where he got bombed. So his, like, overall ERA, I don't think is that good. But I don't think, like, he pitched that bad. Like, you know how what other Mets fans are saying about Mark Vientos? Like, he just needs a chance. Like, that's what I've been saying about John Curtis this whole season. He never gave my man a real shot. And now he's hurt, so he's not going to get a shot.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Also to the IL. RIP. Also to the IL, Josh Walker with a right oblique strain, which, I mean, he did pitch. He pitched in that 21-3 debacle and pitched bad. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
He's been hit or miss, it seems. I feel like there's some potential there.
And then Sam Coonrod, who's been out like basically all year with a lat strain, was activated from the injured list. So Sam Coonrod back in the bullpen.
All right.
Hooray. And Jimmy Iacobonis was outrighted to Syracuse. So we've got lots of bullpen shuffling due to injury and the fact that there are many spots available because
the Mets don't have any pitchers.
Mets don't have any pitchers. So that's fun. It's fun because every day you turn on the Mets game and there might be a different guy on the team you didn't know was there. It's like a fun game.
That happens quite often.
It does. Another fun game is a game we like to call. I took the form of a 45-year-old white man for a reason. I can only fail up. This week's participant in that segment is Oakland Athletics team president Dave Cavall.
A repeat customer.
The Oakland Athletics.
That keeps on giving.
The Oakland Athletics, everyone. he had a really, really cool quote. Actually, this is him breaking his silence. I believe it is the first time he has spoken to the media since the A's announced but it was announced that the A's are probably relocating to Vegas. So Cavall said, quote, "The revenue share was an important financial contribution to fielding a product on the field. So yes, it was a material factor in terms of the deadline." So what he means by that is that their plan to move to Las Vegas is that it is partially driven by them getting more in revenue sharing. Because because Vegas is a smaller market than the Bay Area. So, very cool.
It's also not funny, but the football preseason is starting up and the Raiders were home And they're playing the 49ers, and the entire stadium was 49ers fans. And you want to bring in another team to this market when their own home team, their own home football team, can't even get their own fans into the stadium. Good luck.
Maximum oof.
Yep.
Yeah. So if in case you were under any sort of delusion that this team is interested in investing more money after they move to Vegas, you are sadly mistaken.
They just bought the revenue share.
They're like that sweet, sweet revenue sharing money and casino money, which we will pocket immediately.
Yeah, they're not putting it into the team. It's a joke.
Nope. It is a joke. So the second major happening in baseball this week is something that is not is very distressing that we are going to talk about that we still don't know the details of, and this is still very much a developing thing, and we will keep talking about it as we find out more. But Rays shortstop Wander Franco is not traveling with the team this week because MLB is investigating him for social media posts that allege he had an inappropriate relationship with a minor. These posts were the original post that at least the first post I saw that I think went the most viral on Twitter was a screenshot of an Instagram post from one of the girl's family members. And those posts, those Instagram posts are all in Spanish. And obviously Spanish is not a language that I speak fluently. It's not my first language. I don't know it. I'm not a Spanish speaker, but the gist of it is that the family is getting authorities involved in the situation. And the family was basically like outing this relationship. It's not a relationship. It's rape if it's true. But yeah, the person who tweeted the screenshots also claims that the girl is 14 years old. That has not been officially reported anywhere. All that's in the official reports about this is that it's an alleged inappropriate relationship with a minor of unspecified age. What the rumor that is floating around is that she is 14, but that is not confirmed.
And he's been placed on administrative leave?
No, he's on the restricted
list. Restricted, okay.
There's an important distinction between those two things. So that's he's been placed on the restricted list, which he agreed to. He and the Rays like mutually agreed to place him on the restricted list, which you can do for, I think, up to 6 days or something like that. He can be placed on the restricted list before they have to make a decision about whether to put him on administrative leave. The restricted list is without pay. The administrative leave does involve pay, but I think you can be on the restricted list and administrative leave at the same time, but there's like a clock tick on administrative leave where they have to make a decision about that. Franco, for what it's worth, denies these allegations entirely. He did like an Instagram live on Sunday night after these posts went viral, entirely denying this. His teammate Jose Siri is heard screaming in Spanish in the background of the Instagram live that this is people after money. And Wander Franco, I can't remember whether it was Wander Franco himself or like his people, went on some sort of like Dominican radio show and basically said that this is the family extorting him for money, is what he is saying that this is about. So yeah, there's a lot of outcomes of this. We don't know a lot about this, and it's, we'll see what MLB is investigating, and we will see what they find out. This is going to be difficult for them to find out a lot because the events and the allegations are coming out of his home country of the Dominican Republic. So that makes it all the more like difficult for them to find out details about this. So the team put out a statement in the immediate aftermath of the story going public, saying like, we're taking this very seriously. We placed him on the restricted list. We're working with MLB. And like the statement said, we've been made aware of these allegations, blah, blah, blah. But considering they pulled their AAA shortstop from his game after one at bat the day before the allegations went public, that indicates that they possibly already knew that this was coming.
Yeah, I mean, that looks very suspicious that they knew something was up, or like it couldn't be a coincidence that they did that.
So this is very disturbing, obviously, and needless to say, if these allegations are true, Wander Franco should not only never play another baseball game again, but he should be in jail.
Yeah. Well, they said that's the other thing complicating it is, you know, the police might have to get involved.
Yes. Like, this is Felipe Vasquez stuff.
Yeah.
Hope they do. That's what the family is saying, that they're trying to involve authorities. Yeah, this is Felipe Vasquez stuff. That's the only, like, real precedent I can think of for this. And, yeah, I mean, he didn't play another baseball game again. So, we'll see. But, obviously, never underestimate Major League Baseball's ability to bungle this completely.
Especially since Wander Franco actually has talent.
Yeah, and, yeah, I mean, he's under a contract extension for a very long time, and is one of the game's big stars. So this is like, it's not to say, I mean, Felipe Vasquez was pretty dang good.
That's true. Yeah.
When his situation went down, but a relief pitcher and a star shortstop are completely different stratospheres of like notoriety, I guess. So this is like a big spotlight's going to be on this.
But it's also pretty sad and pretty gross when you have major media members making jokes about this. I'm looking at you, Keith Olbermann.
Yep. There are a couple of gross things going around. First of all, if your initial reaction to this is to make a joke, then you should reevaluate. You should look in the mirror and seriously reevaluate yourself.
You can just not say anything.
Yeah. That is an option.
Not tweeting is always an option.
Mm-hmm.
Just simply don't say anything. The other gross thing that's happening that I pointed out on Twitter and got the predictable results because I made the mistake of including the player's name in the tweet. That's on me, you guys. That's on me. If you tweet about this stuff, to like urge people to exercise caution, to side with the victim, anything like that, do not include the player's name, because every degenerate that wants to defend the player by default will name search the player and go under every tweet about it and tweet abusive stuff.
Nothing is humanly possible.
Yep. So I'm not taking the tweet down because screw you guys. Not you listening, people replying to my tweet. But yeah, if you are recirculating, reposting, sharing in any fashion, unredacted photos of the alleged victim or any of her personal information, you are a bad person.
And also, how gross of a human do you have to be to defend statutory rape just because this is your favorite player? Like, I don't understand what goes through somebody's head that rape is okay because it's your favorite player.
And if you're, I'm sorry, if your immediate reaction to this is to go find this girl's Instagram and say, she doesn't look 14 to me, then that tells me all I need to know about who you are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even if, again, her age is not verified, we don't know exactly whether the rumor that she's 14 is true. Even if it's not true, you're still gross. Like, I don't know how to tell you that, like, sharing her photos and all that stuff and talking about how she doesn't look 14 and inviting more abuse on her by sharing her information, I don't know how to, like, explain to you that that's bad and you don't get it.
No, they're awful human beings, and they're just gonna stay awful human beings. Then, like, with no empathy, even for children, for literal children.
Like, this is the we have talked about this tactic over and over when we've talked about Trevor Bauer on this podcast before. It doesn't matter if her social media is public or not. The tactics that these types of people and the type of people who, you know, support them do is to pile on someone and share all their posts and like quote tweet them and things like that so that their stans will pile on. And her Instagram comments right now, I've been told, I haven't actually gone and looked at her Instagram because I'm not an insane person, but I'm told her Instagram comments are heinous right now, are like disgusting. And that's what you are inviting, no matter how old she is. But even if she's a full ass adult, that's what you're inviting, that level of abuse on her by sharing her handle and her photos and all that stuff. You're perpetuating that.
Nobody deserves that. Yeah.
Nobody deserves that. I don't care if her social media is public. Nobody deserves that. So it's, yeah, please don't do that. And yeah, obviously there's a lot we still need to find out about this, but he alleges that this is just people after money, which is what everyone alleges mm-hmm. about victims, right?
It's the old, yeah, I think Trevor Bauer used that excuse. Fleffinger used that excuse.
She's a gold digger. Her family yep. are extorting me for my money because I'm famous. That's always what you hear. I mean, sometimes that's true, but it's not often true. It's more often not true.
Yeah. I can't think of an instance where it has been true. Not with famous people anyway. It's usually proven later to be absolutely correct. Because why would you want this attention? Everybody's like, oh, they want attention, they want money. Is no, they don't, because this is what happens. Your name gets trashed, you're being absolutely dragged online. That attention's not worth it. Nobody would do this to themselves unless something happened.
And here's what I will say. If she is a minor, regardless of whether the allegations are true about the nature of their relationship, she is still a victim here. Because if the claim by Wanda Franco is true, that the family is extorting him for money, that means that they are using their child as a pawn to extort a famous person for money. And that makes her still a victim of her family members' actions. Yeah. She is a child.
Yeah.
So, you know, keep that in mind. She's a victim. She is a victim of some kind here.
So, either way, it's just a bad situation for this girl.
This is ugly. This is ugly, and there's no outcome that's good. I hope it isn't true. I hope it isn't true. But either way, it's ugly business. And in the, I guess, air quotes, best case scenario, we have a child who was exploited by her family members to try to extort money from a famous baseball player, and like has all the worst bar stool types in her mentions for the rest of her life, or we have rape of a child. Like that's those are basically the range of outcomes. None of that's good. So more on this as it develops, but we need a palate cleanser. So we will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Yesterday, that's Sunday, my son and I took a vintage New York City subway train to the Rockaways. It's this like special run they do. They used to do it all the time before COVID and they haven't done it in a few years. And it was a subway car from like 1915. And we rode it from Manhattan down to Rockaways, and we spent an afternoon on the beach kicking around the boardwalk, getting some food and running around in the water. And it was just like the loveliest way to spend an afternoon. So shout out to the New York Transit Museum, which is always a walk-off win in my book, but they do just so much really cool programming in general. And this is one of their little treats, and it was really awesome. So highly recommend. Check out the Transit Museum, do their vintage subway rides, and it's a good time.
It was a beautiful day yesterday, too.
It was really nice. It was good stuff. And I hadn't been to the Rockaways before. It was very pleasant. Like, we're going to go back and do, like, a proper day of it.
How long is the train ride out there?
Well, so they take you on something of a scenic route. So, okay. But it should be, I mean, one thing that's cool is that train can go hella fast. It can go as fast as any of them, like, which I would not have necessarily expected from a 100-year-old train car. But, you know, I think if as the crow flies, it would have been like an hour 15.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. God, you had a nice time. That sounds
was super
lovely.
Fun. I would do it again. And I might. It looks like they think they're supposed to be doing something with the 7 line in November. So watch for it.
Ooh.
Mm, yes. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is that I'm going to be on vacation next week.
Yay!
We go every year to the Jersey Shore, so it's what I look forward to every summer, even though we usually go the end of August, so that usually means summer's almost over, but I just love the beach. I just love being near the water. It's my happy place. We have a rooftop deck, so we're well supplied with our Prosecco, so we can just sit out and drink on the rooftop deck. And just listen to the waves.
That sounds heavenly.
Oh, it's so nice. It's my happy place. So I will not be on the podcast next week. But I will be in Philly country. Ugh. But other than that, other than the Phillies fans everywhere, I always, you know, the whole family goes, we all, you know, we rent a condo, so I get to spend the week with my niece and nephew, and I think I've said this before, it's been nice seeing them fall in love with a place that, like, I've always loved, so now, like,
yeah,
especially as a kid, seeing them, like, recreate the memories we had as kids, like, you know, making the sandcastles, and, you know, you gotta hit up Core Brothers when you're down there. All the Jersey Shore staples, going on the rides, on the boardwalk, and
mini golf.
Yes, you have to mini golf. And then riding the Surrey, and so it's just the, you know, your typical Jersey Shore vacation. So I hope it's a nice week, to go a good beach week. But you know, it's just either way, it'll be nice to, you know, take a break from the Mets for a little bit too.
Yeah, Lord knows one needs a break from the Mets these days.
Yes.
Which, ironically, my walk-off win is that I went to a Mets game. They lost the game, and it's still my walk-off win. That's how, like, low my standards are now. But, yeah, it was... I went to the nightcap of the doubleheader on Saturday, which was a loss, but not quite as bad of a loss as the day game. Grading on a curve. At least Jose Quintana pitched well. That's about all I can say about the game. And Tim LoCastro made, like, a fantastic catch that didn't end up mattering, like, at all, but it was still, like, one of the best catches I've seen this season. And it was one of those moments that was really fun where I, like, was walking back up from the concourse. I either was, like, getting something to eat or had to go to the bathroom or something. I forget which. But I was literally walking up the stairs as he was running to catch the ball. And so, like, I got to my section, like, as soon as he caught it. So, wow. It was, like, I walked up and saw it. And I was, like, and I, like, raised my arms up and was, like, and, like, turned and faced the group of people that I was sitting with. And everyone was, like, so at least there was, like, a couple of moments in the game to cheer, even though it was, like, overall not a good game. But I feel like
they score at all.
No, they got shut out, I believe.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was bad. Let me confirm that, because, I mean, Lord knows I stopped paying attention to the actual game at a certain point.
What'd you get to eat?
I ate, so Michael and I shared one of those, like, chicken buckets with the tater tots.
Oh.
The place is like the chicken place, like right across from the Shake Shack in center field. And they have like a like chicken tender, like plus loaded tater tots, like bucket. So Michael and I shared that, which was good. And then we also shared some disco fries, which were amazing too.
It sounds like a good choice.
They got shut out. It was 6-0. That's what I thought. I was like, I definitely don't remember them scoring. They had traffic on the base paths, but they didn't score. So yeah. But the real walk-off win of it all was not really the game itself. It was just like spending time at City with a bunch of people I don't get to see that often. Like a lot of my Mets Twitter community was there. Like folks that just like organized a DM and was like, hey, let's all go to the Mets game together. Thomas and Jack were there from Amazing Avenue. And so it's just like, you know, it reminded me that even when the Mets are bad, I can't stay mad at them because they brought me this community of people that are my friends now that I would never have if it wasn't for the Mets. So that's really my true walk-off win in there. It's just the company that I was with and the Met, the fact that like the reason these people are in my life is because of the Mets. And so it was more just I had a great time because of the people that I was with and not the baseball that was being played. And I don't really get to go to Citi Field that often, so I've got to really relish it when I do, because these days it involves a lot of travel. So the only other time I was at Citi Field for opening day and this game, and it's going to be dollars for dingers. And that's really going to be it for me as far as being able to go to Citi Field this year. So got to savor those experiences. So even though the Mets suck, I still had a good time because Citi Field is home. And
didn't you see Miguel again too?
I sure did.
Oh boy.
Oh no, wait, it was Jose Quintana.
Oh, right. Yeah, you did say that. Yeah.
It was Jose Quintana. I saw McGill at Camden Yards.
Yes.
Last weekend. So, which was also a loss, but Camden Yards vibes are awesome. So, again, like, gotta take the silver linings while I can.
Yeah, we're not expecting much at this point.
Sadly, we are not. So, you can join us next week where we will still not be expecting much. In the meantime, you can go to homerunapplesauce.com, check out all of our fantastic pods. You can support our work by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at @HRApplesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky and TikTok at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter and Blue Sky. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cervich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. If you search Home Run Applesauce, you should be able to find our entire feed right there. Please rate and review the show if you have a moment on your podcast app of choice. It really helps people find the podcast. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there's no crying in podcasts.